This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, September 7th, 2017. I'm Caleb Brown. Rent seeking is typically understood as receiving benefits from the public by leveraging government power. But the Tulloch paradox asks this: why is there so little rent seeking? At FeeCon, I spoke with Matthew Mitchell of the Mercatus Center about how we might resolve this long-standing paradox.
What did rent seeking look like when Tulloch wrote his famous article 50 years ago? And also, just for the benefit of our listeners, describe his understanding at the time of what rent seeking actually was.
Yeah. So 1967, Gordon Tulloch writes an article, "The Welfare Costs of Tariffs, Monopolies, and Theft." And it's basically an examination of what happens when people expend resources trying to determine the allocation of wealth, either redistribute wealth or obtain some sort of larger share of economic surplus. So what did it look like? Well, as the title implies, he was looking at three things: tariffs, which are, you know, a redistribution from consumers to of economic surplus from consumers to domestic producers; monopolies, which are a redistribution of economic surplus from consumers to producers; and theft, where people just steal stuff, right? And there's this crazy, it sort of seems crazy in retrospect, but there's this longstanding economic idea that theft is not economically costly. It's not socially costly. And the reason is because the gains of the thief exactly outweigh the losses of the person who had their stuff stolen. So Tulloch's insight was people will expend time, money, and resources either seeking redistribution or trying to defend themselves from redistribution. So theft actually is socially costly because thieves will expend scarce resources trying to seek redistribution. They'll harm themselves in the process of stealing your lunch money. Your nose might get broken in the process of having your lunch money stolen. You might have to pay for bodyguards. So following this, though, rent seeking pretty quickly focused on government activity, using the government to redistribute. And I think that's appropriate. But a large section of the rent seeking literature has focused on political activities of firms that are easily measurable, things like PAC donations and lobbying. So a few years after Tulloch wrote his famous article, he then, in a display of, I think, pretty awesome intellectual humility, wrote an article totally undermining it. And the title of the article is Why Is There So Little Rent Seeking? Or it's something along those lines. But it basically raised the what's known as the Tulloch paradox. And it's the idea that the federal government, and of course the state governments combined, you could add to this, but governments control trillions and trillions of dollars. And yet the measured rent seeking activity, lobbying and PAC donations, is like hundreds of billions of dollars. So why is it so much smaller? So I think that there are some phenomena that are going on in the Trump administration right now that actually explain potentially why it's that help resolve the Tulloch paradox. And there have been various other explanations too.
Okay, so if a rent seeker is not seeking government favor to direct resources their way, what are they doing in order to collect those rents?
So one explanation of the Tulloch paradox is, or a set of explanations are that, you know, they aren't rent seeking. That it's true that they're just avoiding this activity. And there could be various reasons why. One is that there could be taboos. Maybe we have some cultural rules that say you shouldn't seek favors from government. Another explanation could be that there's taboos among government officials, that they don't view it as their job to pick winners and losers. There are, of course, some constitutional rules that try to limit some of this stuff, both at the state and the federal level. So those set of explanations basically say that maybe they're not rent-seeking. Another explanation, by the way, that sort of falls in that category that I find relatively compelling is it's possible they're not rent-seeking because they don't know how. So business people are, many of them know how to navigate the business world, but the political world is very mysterious to them. And I think it's quite possible that some political outcomes are not really determined by the logic of a rent-seeking contest, but instead are arbitrary. So the example I usually go to with this is, I think it was Uday Hussein was in charge of the Iraqi Olympic Commission. It would be pretty irrational for your basically anybody else in Iraq to spend time, money, effort lobbying Saddam Hussein for the job of chair of the Iraqi Olympic Commission, right? It's pretty obvious.
The benefits have been assigned.
Exactly, they've been assigned, and you're not gonna win in that game. So, ironically, we have this bizarre, strange trade-off. Notice it's more efficient if people we don't waste as many resources if people in Iraq don't seek this privilege, but it's also horribly arbitrary. So, and you could even think about examples of rent extraction where government is pulling wealth from people. And sadly, you know, throughout history, rent extraction is sometimes arbitrarily targeting particular groups. Slavery is rent extraction. It doesn't make a lot of sense for a bunch of white people in the U.S. South before the Civil War to spend any resources trying to make sure that they didn't become slaves, because the laws were set that they were never going to become slaves. So you have this bizarre trade-off between terrible waste associated with competitive rent-seeking games and terrible inequity associated with more efficient rent-seeking, where people are just arbitrarily assigned rents or have rents taken from them.
In the sort of traditional how we model rent seeking, it's typically an auction of some benefit, and everyone who wants a piece of that pie has to pony up. And if you don't pony up, you definitely won't win. But even if you do pony up, you probably won't win, or you might not win. Mm-hmm. And so it's not guaranteed that even though you put these resources towards securing some benefit, it's not clear that you're going to do it.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, if you think about trying to ingratiate yourself with a politician, there's a lot of ways you can do it. You can donate to their PAC, you can lobby, but you can approximate these things with basically just thinking about the politician auctioning off the rent to the highest bidder. But here's the interesting thing. Once you donate to a PAC, you can't undonate. Once you lobby, you can't unlobby. Once you ingratiate yourself to a politician, you can't uningratiate yourself, although Marco Rubio seems to be trying sometimes with Donald Trump.
So in some sense, what you're describing is the stream of payments that once you start playing the game, you don't get to stop playing the game, or you'll suffer more than you would had you never played the game?
Yeah, so you're in a situation where, okay, I've already invested, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars seeking this privilege. My competitor, who is also seeking the privilege, has invested a few thousand more than I have right now. And it's rational, actually, to not let those sunk costs affect your decision. Those sunk costs are sunk. You're never going to recover them. So at that point, even though you've invested lots and lots of money in this, it may make sense to continue to invest, because the marginal investment might put you over the edge relative to your competitor. But what does that mean in the aggregate over the long run? Well, it means that people can sometimes invest more money seeking the rent than the rent is even worth. And that's also true, even more true in the aggregate when you add up all the investments that people have made. And then you get into some tricky stuff. In the game, there's not a pure strategy Nash equilibrium. It's a mixed strategy where people basically flip a coin in their head about whether they're even going to play the game or not, but we don't need to get into that. One of the things I would point out, just sort of thinking of the basics, it's bizarro competition. So, you know, there's like, you know, bizarro Superman where up is down and black is white. In normal competition, the more people you add, the more efficient it gets. In a rent-seeking competition, the more people add, the more the rent is dissipated, the more likely it is that you are wasting resources. So it's a really bizarre type of market.
So we think of a large corporation supporting a regulatory regime because they are equipped to deal with it and their smaller competitors are not. And we can see that as a form of, of rent seeking. And it also makes their future rent seeking more efficient because there are fewer people participating.
Yes, they can drive competitors essentially out of the rent seeking market, and it makes it less likely, ironically, that there'll be social waste in that case, even though it may seem more inequitable to us.
So it may be more stable. So over the long run, some of these not particularly competitive industries, and I think some of your research and other research has shown that the extent to which companies are ingratiating themselves with government, they tend to be less nimble, less dynamic. But you're following on with that.
Yeah. So there's some interesting research by a political scientist who is not really coming at this from a public choice perspective, but I think it really sheds a lot of light on this. His name is Lee Drutman. And he had a book out a couple years ago called The Business of America is Lobbying. And he takes a deep dive into just the political activity of lobbyists and firms. And one of the things that he finds is the more a firm lobbies, the better it gets at lobbying. So there are increasing returns to rent seeking. Now, he didn't draw this connection, but when I read that, I thought this is really fascinating because line that up with the theoretical models of rent seeking, and you find an interesting result. It turns out that the circumstances under which wastage of total rent seeking waste is likely to be largest is exactly when there are such increasing returns to rent seeking, that the more you do it, the better you get at it. It's in those types of situations where you're most likely to have what's called over dissipation of the rent, where more people are investing time, money, and effort seeking the rent than the rent is even worth.
So how does the Trump administration resolve this paradox of rent seeking can be a profitable enterprise, and yet given the amount of money that the federal government hands out more and more every year, there seems to be a little of it. How do they resolve that?
So I think there's two, they resolve it in two ways. One way they resolve it is through this channel of basically rent allocation being arbitrary. Trump is supremely unpredictable. He does seem to favor those with whom he has longer connections, it seems. He's surrounded by close associates and family. I think a lot of businesses would likely look at that and say, I don't understand how to play that game, and I'm not going to invest efforts in trying to do so because it seems like the outcome is really hard to predict.
Well, that's not all to the bad necessarily.
No. It may be an unintended good consequence. But I said, notice there's this trade-off. We're still handing out rents. They're still in the business of allocating privileges. But you have a trade-off between, wasteful, inefficient rent-seeking and arbitrary, inequitable, but comparatively more efficient rent-seeking. So that's one explanation, is people may not be seeking rent as much because he seems arbitrary. Another explanation is people are seeking rent, but it doesn't show up in measured rent-seeking. And what this gets at is that, okay, yes, firms can lobby. Yes, they can donate to PACs. But there are other ways that they can ingratiate themselves to politicians. They can change their business models and do things that politicians like. And I think the classic example here are military-industrial complex activities, where you see firms building assembling military equipment in 218 different locations around the country because that will mean that they hire people who are also voters in 218 locations around the country, and that ingratiates themselves to politicians. Another example would be, all of the requirements that policymakers put on businesses that are receiving target economic development incentives. The state of Texas will give you several hundred million dollars if you locate your firm here. You need to hire at least several hundred people and invest several million dollars. Now, a politician looks at that and they see that as a benefit. We're going to make them hire people and invest. If you're thinking about it rationally from a business perspective, costs are costs. Those things belong in the cost column. The real benefit is whether the firm creates useful products and services for consumers. And you actually want them to make those useful products and services in a way that conserves our scarce resources. So you want them to do so with as small of investment, by hiring as few people as possible, by being as efficient as possible. Policymakers are quite confused about this and have been for a very long time since, Bastiat, of course, talked a lot about this. So those kinds of activities where firms are ingratiating themselves to politicians, but not through necessarily PAC donations or, lobbying, I think may explain a lot of what's going on, a lot of the Tulloch paradox, that no, actually, there is a lot of rent seeking. It's just not so obvious.
Matthew Mitchell is a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center. We spoke at FeeCon in June. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast at iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.